the Blue Jays gave us something to talk about, Barker. It's ho-hum, another sweep of the Atlanta Braves. I mean, I don't even know why. I asked you where we want to start here after that that sweep. Ahead of tonight's first game of a series against the Oakland Athletics. The hell's it called now? Ring Central? I mean, they change the name of that damn place so often. The Oakland Alameda call it, or Oakland call it, whatever. The Coliseum. Anyhow, they're playing there tonight. First of four games. This thing changes. It's
I've never played.
Still a hole, but
I've never
changes.
Played there. I heard it's very hard to play there when you're not used to playing with all the foul territory. It is a...
Never mind the sewer overflowing and the rats.
I didn't really care about that. It's all about getting hits, Jeff. Yeah. You figure out how to, you know.
Anyhow, that's we got time to look ahead to that. Ed Sprague's going to join us. He's a former Blue Jay director of player development with the Oakland Athletics. And speaking of Ed Sprague, kudos to friend of the show Danny Jansen. Broke his over, 0-for-35, tying Ed Sprague's club record. We're going to ask Ed about that. You'll ask him about that, won't you?
Well, he is your friend, so Ed's pretty big guy.
Ed's a big guy.
He is.
Ed'd kick our ass together, easy. Well,
he definitely gets yours.
Well, yeah, I was, you know. Anyhow, we'll figure out a tactful way of asking.
So how's the field to go 0-for-35? Hey, but he did break it.
So Ed, there's only two people I could ask who what it's like to go 0-for-35. One of them is on the way to Oakland right now. You're on the station tonight.
But he did go back Lake City when he broke it, though.
Back Lake City, indeed he did. Pitching Springer. Let's start with George Springer because we waited for George Springer's return. We got George Springer's return. Instant impact. That lineup looks... How many guys in that lineup could hit 30?
Six. The first six.
First six guys could hit 30
bombs. As long
as
you're not putting Kevin Biggio in the five spots. We'll talk about that. Just to make you scratch your head.
Let's talk about that another point. But yeah, I was thinking the same thing yesterday. I was looking at this and going, okay, how many guys could hit 20? I was just going with 20, but you're right. There's a lot of power there. Now, of course, the important thing is going to be keeping George Springer on the field. And George Springer, we're led to believe, took himself out of yesterday's game because of soreness, fatigue. You know what? Here's the thing. This is the first month, our first couple of months, of a six-year relationship. Hopefully 6 years. Relationship. I think, given the experience this front office had with Josh Donaldson and to a certain degree Russ Martin and to a certain degree Aaron Sanchez, you know, guys who kind of butted heads with the high performance department in one form or another, I would think you're in a situation now where you are basically letting him call the ball. You're basically letting George Springer call the ball. And what you said to George Springer is, you know, if you're... you got to be honest with us here. Now, but here's my problem. I'll let you weigh in. Don't worry. Here's my problem with the whole thing. And I don't even want to get into the whole high performance department thing. Wouldn't you think that when you were sitting down to decide whether or not George Springer was ready to come back, part of the equation would be, are you ready to play, go out in the field and play in the field instead of just DHing? Because to me, if you're saying, well, there's a chance of injury playing in the field, then I'm looking at that and saying, well, what if you busted all the way down to first base or slip coming out of the box? I mean, all those things. To me, you don't put George Springer in the lineup, you know, until he's ready to go out in the field. Maybe give him a day to DH. Then you run him out in the outfield. So explain that to me.
I think you explained it already. I think you said we're going to let George decide for himself. And I think you saw that. Maybe George came back a couple of days too early. And the fatigue, hopefully it's just fatigue. And I don't even know what that is. Heck, if I would have missed games when I was playing because of fatigue, I'd have never played. I have no idea what that even means. Hopefully, you know, a couple of players that don't play every day carried him to the plane and carried him to his room or is going to carry him to the field. And
be nasty.
And can, you know, hopefully stand him upright at the plate and he can try and hit a homer and don't have to run hard. That's hopefully what you're wishing for. you can see what he brings and how good the lineup looks when he's standing there leading off. Like, you could just look at, just look how much better Bo's at bats look. Like, he just free and easy, looked like he could care less, you know, because the guy sitting in front of him is doing his thing and can carry the team, and Bo feels like he doesn't have to do it all the time. And Vladdy passing the baton. How many 22-year-olds, you know, can walk three times in a game? I don't know too many, but he understands that now in that order and the way, you know, the guys that are hitting around him, he doesn't have to do everything. And that's the ultimate goal here, is to get, you know, at least four guys in the lineup consistently all the time. How do you do that? Again, I think a lot of it gets back to George. And I will say this. For me, when George come back, there's no chance, and you know what, that he's playing center for me. Not a chance. That just because the issues of him with the lower half and keeping him on the field, it's easier playing right field. He doesn't have to run as much. He's not backing up as many balls. He's not running to left. He's not running to right. He's not running back on balls to center. He's not coming in trying to catch the balls that the shortstop can't catch, the second baseman can't catch. He's not doing any of that.
See, I don't get why people are all fired up about needing to see him in center
field. Who's fired up?
Everybody. People are going to, if he's not in center field, I've been saying all along, man, I'd rather have him in right field. I'd rather have him and Grichuk in right
Randall's
field.
I think Randall's a better center fielder than he is. Well, that's just me.
Now then, of course, you got to figure out what to do with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez.
Yeah, Teoscar doesn't like DH'ing. That'll be an issue, too. But.
And you've already said you don't want to put Teoscar in left field. And, you know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., I think, deserves time. There are signs with him that he's coming out of it a bit. As you said, big guy, long swing. So there's, and it's funny. I remind me during the break, I listened into Dusty Baker's Zoom call yesterday. Dusty Baker talked about Yordan Alvarez, and he talked about big guys, long swings,
hard.
And May. It was basically like listening to you.
Yeah.
But anyhow, all that aside, how do you play that?
I'll say this. The X factor in all this is Vladdy and his new little appearance. You don't have to DH him as much now. You could basically play him 35 days in a row at first base. Mm-hmm. And if you need to give him a day off, don't DH him. Just give him a complete day off. And that way you can run the two outfielders, DHing and playing right, that kind of thing. George seems like he's okay DHing. He doesn't seem to mind having the striking out and going over and having to think about it. Teoscar does. Teoscar's came out loud and said that I have issues. If I strike out on a bad pitch, I'm going to go over and think about it, and it's going to carry over to my next at bat. You don't want that. You want him, you know, ready to go and protecting guys in the lineup and doing his thing and driving balls to right center and those kind of things. So there's ways to get everybody in the lineup to maximize what they do the best. First and foremost, it will start with George.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, George has to, like you said, be honest enough to say, and it seems like he is. He's not shy about who he is and about what he does. And if he needs a couple at bats off, he's going to go up and tell somebody that, hey, look, it's something that doesn't feel right. Can I at least have these two at-bats off? I'll go in and get treatment. I'll have the flight to have treatment. I'll come in early before the game and have treatment. And hopefully by the DH time, I'm ready to go that way. What they did are doing against left-handed pitching all of a sudden with him in the order. Mm-hmm. Just that game, too, what did they do? They had 11 hits, 9 runs, and 4 homers off lefties. Just in the first game.
Yeah, I know.
Like, just how good they have to be when they're facing lefties. Those lefties coming in, if they're not establishing something and expanding with something else, they're going
to
get hammered.
But, I mean, I have to tell you, I was more impressed with what I saw out of them against Charlie Morton and against Dean Anderson. I'm not taking away what they did against Drew Smyly, but, Bark, you said Drew Smyly's, you know, Drew Smyly is not, he's not in the same level as, although Charlie Morton does not look the same guy as he did last year. I don't know, maybe time's caught up them.
A lot of the spinning at first, too, is very hard for him. It's hard to establish something spinning and get different release points and be able to throw quality strikes with those kind of pitches. The lineup's really good. He knows he's going to have to establish something quality and expand with something else because of the arm angle.
I was impressed what they did against Dean Anderson because he's good.
Yeah,
and he's going to be good for years.
But I say this all the time, and I've said this to you. Until this lineup goes up hunting a heater, it's very hard to take this lineup serious. And then there was that game.
Mm-hmm.
And that game for me was Friday, April 23rd against Tyler Glasnow, the very first inning. If you remember, Vladdy had the single on a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. Rowdy Tellez had the double off a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Simeon had the home run off a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. Panic had a single off a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. You cannot hit those four pitches unless you're looking for them. Ever since then, what have you been coming in here, and the very first thing out of your mouth to me is, this lineup looks ready to hit. Example of that, Marcus Simeon yesterday, I think it's yesterday, when he had the big hit in the fourth or fifth inning, with the two-out, two-RBI double that he had. If you remember, and you can go back to look, when he is ready to hit the fastball, how much separation there was from the time his front foot hit the ground till the time he actually started swinging the barrel towards the baseball was like a good solid second. You'll know how that is? He's athletically ready to hit velocity, which when you're able to do that, allows you to see spin out of hand, allows you to go process. Okay, that's a breaking ball. I see it because I'm early enough with my lower half. Is that a ball or a strike? That's how you get hangers. And when you get hangers, he's a little out in front. He can keep that fair because he's in an athletic position. You look 1-9 now. Maybe not Kevin Biggio because of the giant little uppercut, and he's having trouble timing that up. And obviously Danny Jansen. But most of the guys that are supposed to hit, they look like they're ready to hit. And that's three-quarters of the battle for me. If they can continue to do that, sky's the limit. And I just said this. Obviously, they had a meeting about that, about if you're going to face a guy like Tyler Glass now, you can't go up looking breaking ball. I know he's got a nice little toy. But why try to look for the new toy he's got? Look for something that's straight and hard, and then we can hopefully get a couple of hangers that way, and maybe somebody can run into one and hit a three-run homer. I just think there's turning points in every team season. For me, that was one of them. It might be the biggest one.
Yeah, well, they certainly seem to have been a different team since then.
Yeah.
The Braves or the Blue Jays are 14-12 going into tonight's game against the A's. This weekend was their first sweep, their first three-game sweep. They've won 6 of 8. I mentioned 14-12 overall. And the 28 runs that they scored are their second most in a single series against the Braves. 34 hits are their most in a single series against the Braves. The Braves play them pretty tough. But, you know, I'm looking at these numbers and looking at the number of pitches that the Jays saw and the number of just the way they ran up the pitch count against the Braves. That gets to your point about how locked in they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about Vladdy later on in the show because there's a really interesting stat about Vladdy I want to throw at you. But we've also we have to talk about the pitching.
Yeah,
pitching in the defense.
Before we move on to that, you know why most hitters don't guess, Jeff? Is because say they're guessing curveball, because they see curveball spin out of the hand, no matter where it's at, they chase it. That's why a lot of hitters can't do that. Mike Trout talks about that all the time. If you ever listen to Mike Trout talk, which is rare. Because, you know, where he plays and how late he plays. But if you ever do sit down and listen to him talk, he always talks about the same thing. I can't guess when he's talking. This is him saying it. I can't guess because when I guess and I'm looking spin, I tend to chase spin no matter what. That's why most hitters don't do it. You notice when the Blue Jays, early on in the season, how much they were chasing. Because they were sitting and trying to guess along with the pitcher and guess spin. Forget about all that. Give yourself a chance. But we'll get back to the pitching. Look, well, the first guy that yells and screams at you is Robbie Ray and the mechanical changes he's made. And for me, it starts mechanically with the now when he lifts his leg, he has the little rotation hip turn with his knee. So his knee will come up, he'll turn it. What the turn does basically is keep him centered and keep him over the rubber. He always talks about if he's late coming off the rubber, his arm starts to drag the ball, the fastball go up and away, or he chokes off the slider and it's a non-competitive slider, which he bounces it. That's pointless.
Mm-hmm.
And normally that adds up to walking guys. And when you walk guys, you don't go deeper in games. So that's the first thing. And then the strike one. We yell and scream about the strike one all the time. Well, he faced 23 batters in that game. He threw 18 strike ones. He had 0 walks. He went 6 2/3. So that's a pretty good where you need to start, right? And then he can move the fastball to both sides of the plate, which is a big deal. Me personally, if I would love to see a perfect Robbie Ray, can the slider. Okay, his fastball can be 2 pitches. Fastball in, elevated fastball, there's 2 pitches. And then he can spin the curveball for a steel strike, which is 0-0, and then chase counts. Chase counts for hitters are 1-1 because they get geared up for the heater, and 2-0. He can steal a strike with that. And then he can also do that with a changeup. So now you got three pitches plus another fastball that you can elevate. The slider for me is just a lot of times non-competitive. It looks to me like he really has trouble with extension and making it look like a strike. And you want him to go deeper? I mentioned this before, that they're the only team in baseball that their bullpen has more innings than their starters do. They can't do that. 113 innings for their starters, 113 and two-thirds for their bullpen. They can't continue to do that. So you need the guys that are supposed to give you innings, give them to you. And for me, the one way Robbie Ray could probably maybe go seven-plus is that way. Maybe eliminate one and dominate with three of them.
Both he and David Phelps seem to have a mastery of the high part of the strike zone. They get a lot of calls, and they have a lot of success pitching up there. Now, I know they're two different guys, but can you explain to me what it is about them in particular that allows them to have that, be that dominant? Because they are, because we talked about David.
Robbie Ray, obviously, look everybody laughs sort of at his uniform, how tight it is. Well, he's proud of himself. The first time I talked to Pete Walker in spring training, the first thing he said to me was how Robbie Ray looks different. I was like, what are you talking about? He says he gained 20 pounds of muscle. Hey, you notice that uniform, how tight it is. It's a little intimidation factor. Look at me out here. And I will say this. The very first, he always talks about maintaining velocity.
Right.
Robbie Ray's first pitch was 96. His 95th pitch was 96 miles an hour. So there you go. He's maintaining that velocity. Now, how can he do that for 30 starts? We'll see. Mm-hmm. But he's set up his body type to sort of do that. The David Phelps thing, if you watch him, he can throw a backdoor cutter. He can throw a front hip cutter. He can sweep his breaking ball, which has that a lot of hitters want to give up on it, and they try and pull it. That's an easy strike for him. He can elevate the four-seamer, like you said. And he can pull the string on the changeup. If you can do those things, meaning add and subtract, sweep a ball from off the plate to away off the plate, and you can throw front hip cutter to a righty and a backdoor cutter to a lefty, and you can throw that a lot of the times where you want to throw it, there's reasons why he's coming in the meat of the order to face those kind of guys, because he's filling it up with quality strikes, and Petey knows it. That's the one guy Petey said, keep your eye out for him. Because of the way he controls the strike zone, and he adds, subtracts, and he can get both guys out, lefties and righties. And then on top of it, you're adding a Ryan Borucki to it. You see the slider Ryan Borucki had? He gets the lane with the slider and get finish on it. I mean, he can set the lane out of his mechanics where he's getting it going down the slope, and he can maintain it and keep it in that till the end. And it has the late bite to the slider, meaning it doesn't have to be for a strike. Mm-hmm. If he can do that with the 95 to 98 mile an hour sinker, look.
I think Ryan Borucki can emerge as the most important guy in that bullpen. Maybe not the closer, but I think he can emerge as the most important guy in that bullpen.
He can pitch from the fifth to the ninth inning.
Anytime.
He's left-handed, which doesn't come around all the time. Their starters are going to have to step up.
Well, as we know right now with the series, the four-game series against Oakland, it's Steven Matz, TBA, Robbie Ray, TBA. Now we're led to believe one of the TBAs will be Hyunjin Ryu.
The sixth.
And the other TBA, Anthony Kay, one would assume. Four lefties running out there for the Blue Jays. I mean, there's not the four best you have. Why not?
Yeah.
That's where you are right now.
Again, it puts more pressure on their offense. That's why you hope George Springer's healthy enough to be in the lineup every day. And they're going to need to win some 10-6 games.
Yeah. Of course, they also, this being the Blue Jays and this being 2021, made a couple of IL moves. Alejandro Kirk going on the IL. And Anthony Castro.
Tommy Malone.
And Tommy Malone.
Your boy.
Wow. Tommy, let's be clear. Here's a choice, IL or DFA.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It would be interesting to see how they use Riley Adams. That'll be a little bit of interesting.
Riley Adams has been called out, yeah.
I know John Snyder's a big fan of him, the way he processes all the advanced analytical stats, because that's what they do. They mm-hmm. just storm you with it, give you a big old booklet to go home with and figure out when you're going to throw it and how much you're going to throw it and bat planes, and there's so much. But they say he's good at it. Yeah. They say he's advanced with it, and they say he has more power than anybody in their minor league system.
I was going to say, he's got raw,
but he's got a ton of swing and miss in his stuff. Again, he's not going to play a ton, but it'll be interesting when they do play him.
Yeah, I've got to think that playing yesterday, traveling to the West Coast, quick turnaround. Now, you do get a bit of a benefit because you're starting later, you know, later body time because you're on the West Coast. But man, I got to think that there's a possibility here that I mean you've got to somebody catch one of those four games. I don't think you have Danny Jansen catch all four, and you probably want Danny. This is just me saying you probably want Danny real fresh to catch Ryu. So I don't know, maybe and Robbie Ray, Alejandro Kirk's his guy.
Yeah.
What do you do there?
Ray's not a big fan of shaking off either. He likes to let the catcher call the game, but he does have, you know, it's not the hardest thing to put down. When in doubt, put down the old number one, 98.
Anyhow, we will get a chance to see how that plays out starting tonight with the first of four. The Oakland Athletics, ho-hum, were maybe the worst team in baseball at the start of the year. Had that horrible losing streak. Then they won a bunch of games. And, you know, we talk about the Blue Jays. Well, let's take a look at the A's. Look what they lost from last year. No Marcus Semien. They lost their closer, Liam Hendricks, who was a bulldog, not just any closer. He was a two or three inning closer, if you want to look at it that way. And then they signed Trevor Rosenthal to replace him. Trevor Rosenthal has gone down for the year with thoracic outlet syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
They have two of the top three relievers in baseball in terms of appearances, and they just keep rolling on, man.
Yep, Matt
they keep rolling on.
Yeah, Matt Olson's figured something out with the big, you know, if you can picture how he looks with the separation
between his barrel and his hands. At third base does not get talked.
Matt Chapman
doesn't get talked about.
He's got off a little bit of a slow start offensively, but defensively, he's a game changer there. He makes everybody else around him and makes the pitching staff better.
Yeah. Ed Sprague is the director of player development with the Oakland Athletics. He'll join us next. This is Baseball Central. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right. Well, they had an awful losing streak. Then they had an amazing winning streak. And it really doesn't matter, I don't think, when you look at the standings, Kevin Barker. At some point, the Oakland A's are either first or second. They happen to be first right now. They are 17-12 in the American League West, ahead of Seattle and Houston and LA and Texas. And as we said, this has been, this year, at least, you could say that this has been the very definition of a streaky team. They will be the Blue Jays' opposition for the next four nights in the East. One of those games is the 3:37 start. Ed Sprague is, the director of player development with the Oakland Athletics, and he joins us on Baseball Central. Ed, always good to talk to you. We trust that you're keeping well. And, you know, Barker and I were talking about this a little bit before you came on, and I talked about it just a few minutes ago about how, again, here are the A's. You know, Marcus Semien leaves. Liam Hendricks signs as a free agent elsewhere. Team gets off to a sluggish start. Everybody's sitting there looking at, well, they're wondering if things are going to be able to, you know, if the ship's going to be able to get right. Well, got right. Oakland's in first place, five games over 500. What is it about this organization that allows it to absorb all those setbacks or those negatives and not just be competitive every year, but be a contender a lot of times?
Well, I think it starts with the clubhouse culture, you know, that Bob Melvin's established there. I think you got a bunch of guys that really get along. I think, obviously, our front office, you know, David Forrest, Dan Feinstein, they've done, you know, Billy Bean, have done a great job of finding the right pieces to fit into that culture and help us win ball games. And, you know, it's obviously we don't have the highest payroll. We're in a smaller market. Our guys kind of thrive on that, and you know, our player development, drafting, you know, develop guys is obviously a key role, and then, you know, finding those right pieces when we're in a winning window, and David's done a nice job with that.
And I know you know this, that all the stats around baseball are down, the batting averages, runs scored, home runs, all those kind of things. But you are starting to see a little bit of hitters trying to hit it where they ain't. Maybe shortening up a little bit, trying to put barrel to baseball. Do you think hitters throughout the league are capable of doing that?
I do. I mean, I think it's harder to hit in the big leagues now than ever, but I do think hitters are able to beat the shift. You know, the problem, the industry hasn't paid for that yet.
Yeah.
So I think when they're paying for that ability to hit the ball the other way, beat a shift, and reevaluate how, you know, the games are being won and lost, you'll see more guys do it. Right now it's, you know, it's power velocity and it's home runs, and that seems to what gets the money in the free agent market. And so guys are trending toward that direction. But, you know, guys get the ball down the ground, give up ground balls, go deep in the games. If that becomes a, you know, major value again, I think you're going to see guys, you know, backing off the velocity and pitching to contact a little more.
Yeah, hey, you know, one of the hallmarks of this team as well has been they've, in some ways, like the Blue Jays, they're always able to put a bullpen together. You know, whether or not there's an identified closer, it always seems as if this front office, this organization, yes, they seem to find arms that can finish out games, or that can, you know, can keep a lead or hold the fort so that a lead can get reestablished. And I know that when you talk to the Blue Jays, one of the things they say is they kind of follow, they followed the Rays MO a little bit, in that they talk about different arm angles, lefty, righty, you know, different stuff, velocity. I mean, try to throw as many looks as possible at a team. Is that part of what Oakland does as well? Just try to, you know, try to have as many different weapons down there, or is there a little different underpinning to the philosophy? Because it seems to me a lot of times you guys do, you know, it's still the guys like Romo and Yusmeiro Pettit and those guys, it seems like you're able to hang on to guys and have them be very effective out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. I mean, I think that, you know, the league in general is a copycat league. And when you see other teams having success with how they've constructed their bullpens, teams have a tendency to follow that model. We have a bunch of different looks down there as well. Like you said, with different velocities, different arm slots, right, left. I think, you know, understanding your opponents, who you're going to play against the most, how those matchups look like, and then going out and trying to get players that fit the mix that Bob Melvin can kind of plug and play in different situations. So having a long tenured manager and how he likes to use the bullpen, I think, is very helpful as well. A lot of experience in the front office, a lot of continuity in, you know, how our ballpark plays, how our division plays, how we win games is, I think that's what gives a lot to it as well.
Okay, you just mentioned how the ballpark plays. I got to ask you about all the foul territory in Oakland. What kind of challenges you think that gives teams coming in to play against Oakland?
Well, I mean, obviously, your foul balls that typically would be in the seat somewhere else are going to get run down. And, you know, we're very fortunate. We have great athletic corners and Matt Olson and Matt Chapman. And a lot of those, you know, foul ball strikes turn into outs. So there's a lot of area to cover there. And, you know, as a corner guy, or, you know, it's, you're not used to having to cover that much ground in foul territories. So you might not be used to it. But especially being, you know, Blue Jays are a younger team, they probably haven't played out here that much. But that's really the difference. And then it can be frustrating, obviously, offensively, where you just miss a pitch and you think it's a foul ball and you're walking back to the dugout. So, I mean, there's a little bit of that advantage. You know, obviously, we don't draw huge crowds, but our crowds that are there are pretty boisterous. You know, it can cool off at night. It'll play completely different at night than it will during the day. Wind changes directions quite a bit. So understanding, you know, where to position yourself defensively is important as well.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing you talk, Ed, and I know Kevin asked you that question because we saw a game earlier this year where the Minnesota Twins lost the game in a throwing error by their third baseman. I think it was Luis Arraez was at third base. And Trevor Plouffe tweeted out that, you know, because Minnesota fans were getting on him, and Trevor Plouffe tweeted out that, hey, take it from me, playing third base in Oakland isn't always easy, not just because, and he's not just talking about the foul territory, but he said the other thing the foul territory does, in addition to giving you territory to cover, is he said it can kind of screw with your depth perception if you're not used to it, right? Because the stands are farther back from first base. As someone who is an infielder, is that a factor? You know, do you hear visiting teams talk about that as well?
It is a factor, and as someone who played the corner and had plenty of throwing errors myself, I can tell you that first baseman looks really small with all that open space behind him. It's very similar to, you know, basketball team that goes into one of those big, huge domes like the Carrier Dome or something, and you see shooting percentages go down because the background, the depth perception just doesn't quite allow that same touch. And you get a little bit of that same feeling in Oakland. When you get a ground ball on that left side, you're trying to throw across, it just looks like you're throwing to someone standing on an island out there. It's a little difficult.
Okay, now I got to ask you about this. I don't know if our producer tipped you off in this, but Danny Jansen broke an 0-for-35 yesterday that had him tied with you for the longest 0-for in Blue Jays in Blue Jays history. Buck Martinez, I will hasten to add, was 0-for-32 as well. But I wanted to ask you because, you know, we look back at that year. I mean, you were hitting .306 at the time, which I think was 41 games into the season. It was a pretty good start. Can you just tell us a little bit about what that was like, how you got out of it, and maybe take us inside the mindset of someone who's gotten off to a good start and all of a sudden it's like the hits dry up?
Yeah, it's really a cyclical process. I mean, what happens is if you're swinging good at the time, sometimes you think you can hit everything. And then other teams know you're hitting good, so they try to expand their zone on you. And next thing you know, you start chasing some pitches that you normally wouldn't have. And so there's one game goes by, two games go by. And now you start thinking, okay, now I'm 0-for-8, 0-for-10. And you start, you know, probably trying to make a mechanical change or look at too much video. And, you know, you get a lot of noise coming in either from, you know, hitting instructor or fans or media, and it's starting to block all that out, and then things can snowball on you real quick, and that's typically what happens. And until you kind of just, you know, say screw it, I'm just going to go up there and get back to basics and not worry about the result, that's usually when you come out of that. And, you know, I mean, 0-for-35, I don't know how long it took Danny to get there, but for me it was about 8 to 9 days. I was fortunate enough that Cito just kept throwing me back out there and asked me, he's like, "Hey, you want to play?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll go play." I wanted to get out of it, you know, and sometimes it takes a while, and it's a rough stretch. So I wouldn't put anybody in that situation. It's brutal, but a lot of times it's just getting back to basics and, you know, attacking a good pitch. You got to take some walks in there. You know, you want to hit your way out of it. Right. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times you got to learn to take a walk, you know, and let them come back to you. And not try to do too much.
Ed, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much. Terrific insight as always. Stay safe and be well.
Thanks, Ed.
Guys, thank you.
Take care. That's Ed Sprague, Director of Player Development at the Oakland Athletics.
Yeah, now he did get out of it. He did hit a homer off of Todd Van Poppel.
Todd Van Poppel, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that was one of those things where it was interesting him talking about expanding and he'd gotten off to a hot start and the league was making adjustments, you know, starting to spin it a little bit more, starting to try and make it look like strikes, starting to try and sweep breaking balls, like sort of like David Phelps does, that kind of thing, pitching a little bit backwards. It's funny that Danny Jansen got off to a 2-11. He got 2-for-11, and then he went into his 0-for-35 start. Well, which is worse? Is it easier or harder to start this at the beginning of the season or the middle of the season?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I shouldn't say I've always thought, but one of the things that is really unique to baseball, like you're basically saying, when would you rather have a slump? To me, the guys that I've covered, the slumps that are concerning are kind of the slumps that Danny was in, because it's not the first 2 weeks of the season. So it's not coming out of spring training, I'm trying to get, you know, but it's so early in the season that your average just, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, an 0-for can take you from 220 to, I don't know, to 206 or something. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't have the number of at-bats.
Yeah.
So it, numerically, it looks bad. You know, Danny Jansen goes to the plate. What was he hitting? 049 or something like that at one point?
Yeah.
That looks bad. So to me, this is the worst time to have a slump. If you have a slump in the summer, first thing everybody says, it's dog days, you know, it's hot, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. You never want to slump at the end of the year because that raises all sorts of things. This, to me, is when it's, especially when you're a catcher, because you're out there every day and you know Danny is thinking, I can't let it affect my catching, because if it affects my catching, the one thing that's keeping me in this lineup, people are going to look at me.
Sure. Well, Ed did finish the season, too, at 240 with 11 and 44 RBIs.
Yeah.
Danny would probably take that. That's a really good year. The only thing I'll say about Danny is I've had many struggles. And I've never told you this, but one time in the minor leagues, I actually sold a car because I was struggling trying to change it up a little bit. I can't remember the season. Yeah.
Tell me about
it. I was like 0 for 24 or something, and I had an older car. I just trade it in or sell it and – You know what the worst thing about selling my car was? Because I was 0 for 24. You try anything. I was
you
trying
sold
different
the car
bats.
Because
yeah,
you're
0
for 24?
Yeah, but it was
24?
An old car, and I was trying to get rid of it.
How much money did you get for it?
Not much. A couple grand. It's an old car. I was in the minor leagues.
What would?
Selling cars. That's what you do. You try and change things up. I tried to use somebody else's bat. I tried to use somebody else's
Hold
bikes,
on, never mind that. I'm talking about the car.
Yeah, but it's an old car.
What doesn't matter if it's an old car?
I was going to sell it anyway, but... That 0 for 24 made me sell a little sooner. I can't remember where I was at. I was probably in AA or AAA.
You can't remember where you were slumping so bad that you sold a freaking car?
0 for 24 is not atrocious, but it's bad enough that it makes you want to sell your car. Paul Tucky. No, it wasn't Paul Tucky.
But you sold a car, and you don't know when. This is... How can you not know when you were slumping so bad you sold a car? Like, that's not something that everybody... It's not like changing,
you know how many
changing
years I've
underwear
played the
and stuff like that.
Sure it is. I was going to sell it anyway.
Do you remember what type it was?
It made me want to sell it. It wasn't my Prelude because I would have
No, you're not selling the Prelude.
I traded that in.
Yeah.
But I had an older car and I sold it. And then I wanted to buy a newer car. And the 0 for 24 made me want to do it a little sooner. So that's why I did it. It didn't work. And I also had to walk. So, you know, it's just piling on top of everything.
I'm just amazed that you remember having to walk, but you don't know where you sold your car.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's a lot of minor league places I was in and a lot of things I did to try and get hits and trying to make it to the big leagues.
You have told me where and when you slept in the middle of the road because the bus broke down. Okay, I understand.
Yeah,
that's different. That's something.
That's rookie ball. That's the first time I ever did that.
All right. But that's, you know, selling a car because you're slumping. You got to remember that.
But that's advanced. I was going to sell it anyway, and then I went out for 24, and I blamed it on the car, so I went out and sold it a little quicker than I wanted to. That didn't work.
All right.
You do things to get hits. That's what I'm saying. My point with Danny is, he's trying everything.
Glasses.
Yeah, contacts. Yeah.
Well, I think that the glasses didn't arrive in time or something like that. I don't know.
So you try everything. Me personally, you know, he's swinging his strikes. That'll help.
He's not
chasing as much.
Jesus.
He's not leveling out his swing enough.
What'd your manager say when you told? Well, of course, you wouldn't remember who the manager was because you don't remember where you were when you sold the car.
I sold my car for. Managers don't work that way. When you see a manager, it's normally not a good thing. I mean, the minor leagues, you see the manager a little bit more than you want to because he's usually out hitting you fungos and, you know, he tries to be all buddy-buddy with you, but that's mainly your hitting coach. Your hitting coach joined at the hip.
590-590 is a text line. What is the thing? Boy, this could get dangerous. Have you ever done anything like sold a car to end a run of bad luck? 590-590 is a text line. I'm going to monitor this all during writer's block as well. This is the thing. Have you ever been scuffling so badly? It could be at work, it could be at school, it could be hosting a radio show. Have you ever scuffled so badly that you have done something extraordinary to break a losing streak, like selling a car? I just can't believe you can't remember. How many cars have you sold?
If it means that much to you, I can go.
No, I know.
Do you, research.
No,
on
I don't
when
want
I
you
sold
shouldn't
my
have
car.
To research on when you sold your freaking car.
No.
No, and he don't.
I didn't struggle a ton in the minor leagues. I'll be honest with you.
So you raked. You're back leg Barker. Back leg Barker.
Yeah,
they called you.
That was.
all right, we're going to talk about Vladdy. Some interesting stats on Vladdy Jr. Some pretty spectacular stats on Vladdy Jr. That just reinforce how much he looks like the Vladdy from the minor leagues. And Barker, I want to talk a little more about that foul territory thing in Oakland. Ed Sprague talking about the issues because the stands are so far back from the field. As he said, it's like throwing to a guy on an island half the time. So we'll talk about that. I know you haven't played in Oakland, but you must have played in a bunch of parks where they're real close or really wide. I'm hoping you can remember that since you can't remember where you sold your car when you were in the middle of a slump. It's Baseball Central. It was an old car, right?
It was.
Yeah. It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Right, so 85 years ago today, 1936. And no, I wasn't around to see it,
you
Parker.
You were too.
I wasn't around to see it. You were Jolton Joe DiMaggio made his major league debut. The athlete I was never able to see play in person.
Yeah.
That I would most have loved to see play in person. And that hitting streak, that ain't ever been touched.
Never.
Never. No. Don't even bother trying to do it.
Not unless they eliminate that shift.
Not happening. And especially if you've got a high performance department, they're not going to let you do it. 590 is the text line.
I see what you did.
I've asked the question. We've got the answer. Barker did some research, by the way.
I did not. This came to me.
We have the answer. Can we get a drum roll for this? The answer to the car that Barker sold when he was 0 for 24 is... Go ahead.
Toyota 4Runner.
It's not even a car. It's a truck.
It is a car. It's not a truck. It's like an SUV.
Well, that's not a car.
It's like a mini SUV. Buggy whips it.
So there you go. What? It was a Toyota 4Runner.
Yeah. What? Do anything you get hits, yeah?
590, 590. Andrew in Mississauga sold a gold ring with the head of a lion on it. Hopefully not a real lion because it seemed to be attracting negative energy. This story, Adam in Hamilton. I got a new Charger SXT, so my cousin brought a Mustang, making him faster than me, which was unacceptable. So I went out and brought a Charger SRT 392 a month later, thus breaking my quarter mile losing slump. Adam in Hamilton.
Size matters.
He found his Jimmy John's.
He found Adam. You found your Jimmy John's. You found it down at the Charger dealership. What is this? Scott and Barry. I like to bet on sports. I was on a long bad streak, so I grabbed my wallet, took out my license, health card, etc., but left the $40 cash and all my bank cards and credit cards in it and set it on fire. And went, I call BS on this. And went out and got all new cards the next day.
Yeah.
No, that's a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
That's a lot of trouble. I mean, you got to be a true degenerate gambler to do that. Nobody's
have
that
a
degenerate.
Serious issue with that.
Anyhow, very quickly, I want to get to my Vladdy Jr. stat, but I want to ask you about Ed Sprague. And folks are going to notice, you've seen games from Oakland. Miles and miles and miles of foul territory because the idiots basically put a ball field down in the middle of a freaking football
stadium.
There
you go.
So, but it does create an issue. You're at third base. You got a ground ball. And you got a young third baseman in Kevin Biggio. You got a young first baseman in Vladdy, although admittedly a good one. Is that a concern for you?
No. Offensively. Nobody cares about defense, Jeff. Right.
Okay.
Care about getting hits.
We'll talk about that tomorrow. We spent a lot of time talking about Bo Bichette's defense.
We do.
And I care about defense.
He's hitting. How good's that defense looking?
Defense looks really
good. There you go. Except his throws occasionally. He'll chuck one where he shouldn't chuck it. But other than that, he's pretty good. Hey, look, they're going to have to make a little bit of an adjustment. What you don't want to do is start changing up things that you swing at because of the field, and that puts you in a slump. And then we have to come on here talking about what you got to sell.
Nobody goes in a slump because there's lots of foul territory, do they?
Sure do. I think about all the time. Wind blowing, I got to hit it left field instead of right field. Oh, yeah. Let the ball travel a little bit more. Start going out and around.
Creating
a bad habit.
All right.
Next thing you know, I'm in A ball instead of double A.
I'm going to give you.
Talk to me.
A list of players. Ronald Acuna Jr., Max Muncy, Freddie Freeman, Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor, Anthony Rizzo, Carlos Santana, Jesus Aguilar. I'm getting into some scrubs now. Nick Madrigal of the White Sox. Vladdy Guerrero is part of that list, too. You know what that list is?
What?
He has more walks than strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
In his first 26 games, he already has more walks than he did last year, and it's higher than his strikeout total.
Look, mechanically, he's where he needs to be. That's everything. He has everything when it comes to hitting. If he can mechanically get that thing going on time and not too early, he's rarely late. It's normally when he has to start that front foot a little too early and he has to wait on the baseball. And the hands start to drop a little bit more and his hand movement's a little bit too big. But if it's on time.
By the way, Nick Madrigal, who I included in that list, Chicago White Sox rookie.
Yep.
First month of the season. Mm-hmm. He still hasn't swung and missed at a pitch in the strike zone.
Oh, I don't. Whatever.
That from Jeff Passan.
I'm not buying that.
That's from Jeff Passan. It's right
Jeff
there. It's right
that.
There. Yeah, because yeah, he's gotten
game?
Them.
Watch every single game.
Well, you can go online and find out. It's not that hard.
Every single time. He never swung through one pitch.
Hey, you can find all that
Many
information online.
One time?
You can find all that information online. At least you didn't have to go online to find out what type of car he sold. At least you remember that. 9:40 Eastern time is first pitch tonight between the Jays and the Athletics.
Yeah, good luck staying up, Jeff.
For the old forerunner himself, Mr. Kevin Barker.
Tell him.
I'm Jeff Blair. Don't go anywhere. Writer's Block is next.